series For God Alone, about times of quiet with God and how we can really enjoy our personal times with God and why they're so important. We talked about the first week, and then last week we talked a bit about what a quiet time needs. Now, what about you? And we talked about this every week, but in my ideal idea of what it means to be close to God, I want to have those regular times of quiet with God. I want to be close to Him, and I want them to be meaningful. There are some things I struggle with, and we've talked about some of these things before, which I think are common to us in the Christian life, the consistency and things like that. There's also a couple of other things that sometimes get in the way of me enjoying this relationship with God, and one is boredom. I just get a bit bored sometimes in my prayer and my Bible study. And the other challenge I sometimes have is bewilderment, by which I mean I'm bewildered about what God is doing. Some things just don't seem to be making sense. And sometimes those two quite different issues in my life of either boredom or bewilderment are the challenge for me in having a close relationship with God. And I shared last week about the irony of the fact that I write and talk a lot about relationship with God. And tonight we're going to talk about how boredom and bewilderment can actually give us the opportunity for better quiet times. I wrote a book for people to have good quiet times, another for the swimming pool. I wrote back in 2007, I think it was, a devotional to help people have good quiet times. It sold okay. And even to the point where in Indonesia they liked it. They rang me up from Indonesia, churches there, and asked me whether it would be okay to translate it into Bahasa. I had to look at what Bahasa was first, but that's the language of Indonesia. So they got someone to translate it, and that's the translated Bahasa version. I have a copy. They gave me a copy. Very nice of them. I can't read it, but but when I went to Jakarta to speak there, they arranged a book signing for me in their bookshop in their church building that they have. So I'm signing my own books. It's quite a surreal experience. I never thought that would happen to me. But I can write a book about it, but I can still get bored in my relationship with God. I can write a book about it, but I can still get bewildered about what God is doing, and I get confused, and I can't focus in my prayer or my Bible study or my sense of walking with God. So if you struggle with these issues of boredom or bewilderment, then this class is for you, as well as it is for me. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight, how boredom and bewilderment can make for better quiet times. They don't have to be a barrier. They can make for better quiet times. Now, quick review from last week. We talked about the need to cut things out. If we're going to create, we talked about being creators, not victims, and how we can create the space and the time to have that time with God, but it will mean cutting some things, because if we're going to find and create that space and that time, it means cutting out some of the things. No pressure here and no requirement, but does anybody like to share about anything in the last week that they found has helped you, helpful? Anything you feel like you've learned or has been good for you? Go ahead.
So, as I was saying on Low Early Communion, it's been kind of tough a few weeks. I think it's just kind of God's given things through you to listen to some things that are basically, I think when I'm kind of all right, it's okay for me to have some quiet time, kind of focus much larger. But at this point, when you have a lot of things going in your head, it kind of really puts a lot of obstacles in front of you, right, just to get into the quiet time. I think the series really helped me to calm myself, the silence, and how to basically remove or kind of cut off things that are in the way, mm-hmm. so that you can kind of focus on things. So, and it's also helped in a positive way how I actually speak and do things. My level of temper has come down, mm-hmm. and it's been a much better week for me. So good. I think it's kind of really working. So I'm just trying to practice all of the things that you say, not in like full flood. It's really hard, but few things when you actually put it in perspective, the result that comes out of it is completely different than what it was before, because I'm kind of seeing the difference between the weeks.
Okay. Yeah, this quiet time to quiet with God can be transformational. Absolutely. Thank you. Anybody else want to share? Well, we'll move on to today's material. Okay, we'll move on. So today, we're going to talk about resources. Now, first of all, when we talk about resources to help us with our quiet times and dealing with boredom and bewilderment, then we've got to talk about the Bible first, right? So, in these two challenges of bewilderment and boredom, let me ask you this. When you think about characters in the Bible, Old Testament or New Testament, can you think about some people who were stimulated to pray by something that happened? Who can you think of? People that were stimulated to pray, to spend some time alone with God by something that, happened. Joy?
Nehemiah.
Yeah.
When he got the news that the walls had broken down in Jerusalem and everything was upside down.
Okay, he prayed. Excellent, thank you, yeah.
Jonah in the
mail. That made him pray. Yeah, it did, didn't it? Yeah.
Job.
Because of the disaster that happened to him. Yeah, okay, good, yeah.
David, just like, you know, his situation with, you know, just like when Saul was after him and, you know, just trying to figure out, you know, what's going on, and then when he had a chance to actually, you know, take him down, you know, he kind of would pray over it and, you know, kind of, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, yes.
Daniel,
okay, we talked about him last week, I think, yes? Mm-hmm. 3 times a day going off to pray, yeah?
Elijah, when he was on the run from Ahab.
When he was on the run. Okay, he got some time alone with God.
Yes.
God arranged it.
Yes.
Right, it wasn't so much Elijah's decision to do that, but nonetheless.
Well, okay, but he sat down on the tree and said to God, I'm no better than my ancestors.
Fair point. Yes, quite right. Okay, good. There's so many, actually. If we sat here for a while, we'd come up with dozens of these. So here's a couple, just to be thinking about how many I've got on there, 5 or 6, and I think the references are on your handout. Somebody has mentioned one or two of them already. So we have Jonah and the fish. The huge fish swallowed Jonah. He was in the belly of the fish 3 days and 3 nights. I don't know what you'd be doing, but what Jonah does is he prays. That's what he does. In my distress, it says, I called out to the Lord, he answered me. From deep in the realm of the dead, I called for help. I mean, he's bewildered. I mean, you've got to ask yourself, is there a more bizarre situation than finding yourself in the belly of a fish? I mean, that is bewildering, if anything's bewildering. But his instinct, maybe not straight away, we don't know how quickly, but he got to the point of prayer. And it changed everything for him, of course. Shit, the fish vomited him up. I think the thought I would have from this is that sometimes we get in a situation where our own rebellion toward God takes us into tough places. Because that's what got Jonah into the fish, was his rebellion against the clear will of God. And even in those situations when we're reaping the harvest of our own rebellion, those are still good places to stop and pray. They give us a reason to pray. Somebody mentioned Hezekiah. He was ill. No, sorry, Nehemiah. But anyway, Hezekiah comes next there. Hezekiah becomes ill, and he's at the point of death, it says, in 2 Chronicles. He prayed to the Lord, who answered him, and gave him a miraculous sign, and gave him another, was it 15 years of life? That, what this says to me is, sometimes God allows tough stuff into our personal lives. That's not part of our control. We didn't cause it. It just happens. And it happens to us, not somebody else or some other situation, but it happens to us, and we question, we get bewildered as to what God is doing. And what does Hezekiah do when he hears about this? He doesn't resign himself, he prays. Now, God doesn't always give us more life, but he hears the prayer. It drives Hezekiah to prayer rather than drives Hezekiah away from prayer. That's must be one of the reasons we have this example in the scriptures. And Nehemiah, twice in chapters 1 and chapter 2 of the book of his name, in chapter 1 he hears the bad news about the breaking down of Jerusalem. The gates are burned with fire. And it says, when I heard these things, I sat down and wept. He was bewildered. What is going on? And for some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. Sometimes God lets us hear discouraging news. That discouragement for me, when I hear discouraging news, is one of the times when I feel least motivated to pray. That's me anyway. I find that, I hear bad news. Discouraging news, not just theoretical bad news about something somewhere, but it really gets to me, someone I care about, something's happening. So he gets discouraging news, but it makes him pray in his bewilderment. And then secondly, in chapter 2, he gets to be right in front of the king and serving the king, and the king says, "What do you want?" I mean, when a king says, "What do you want?" Fantastic opportunity, right? And then it says, what does it say after the king asks him, "What do you want?" It says, "Then I prayed to the God of heaven, and I answered the king," and he gives him his request. And the king grants his request to go and rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. That was a quick micro prayer, right? Just there, but between the king asking him what he wants and him opening his mouth, must have been a small window. But he prays that prayer. He really sees that there's an opportunity there. God is doing something. Rather than just jumping with both feet straight away, let me pray, even if it is only for a moment. We see that it's not about length of time in prayer that matters. It's about the opportunity. It's about the reasons why we're praying, what's going on. Sometimes God surprises us with what we might regard as an overwhelming opportunity. I like my opportunities to come in bite-sized pieces, you know, where I can accept them and I can handle it. I don't like it when I'm overwhelmed with an opportunity. But sometimes that's what happens to us. We get overwhelmed. We get into a situation beyond what we feel we've got the courage for. Can you imagine talking to a king? A king who has the power over your life. A king who has the power over your people. And you're the guy. And you're the person. And what does he do? He prays because he knows he can't handle the power that's in this situation on his own. So he prays. And then we have Jesus, who of course is in Gethsemane in Luke 22. And it says, in being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly. And his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. So what do we have with Jesus? We have a situation where God has demanded something of him that he doesn't feel he can handle. I can't drink this cup. And so we get that sometimes. God allows things into our lives that we feel our faith isn't ready for. Especially those of us who have ever been asked to lead something, take responsibility for something. The right response is usually, "No, I'm not the right person." It's not usually, "Oh, I've been waiting for this. Glad someone's realized I'm capable." That's not generally the right kind of response, right? But it's not usually a harsh response when someone says, "Could you take responsibility for this? Could you do this? Could you do that?" We're not ready. I mean, we need, ultimately, as we pray that God will do his will through us, we're going to need more family groups in more places and more location services in more places. And it's exciting to see what's happening in Salisbury. It's exciting to see what's happening in various places, but it's still only a handful, isn't it, of situations in a huge area of this country. God's going to be expecting more of me and more of us, more of you, more of each one of us than we're currently doing. And I dare say often we'll get an opportunity to serve God in some way that we will feel our faith is not prepared for. And yet God is saying, "Come on, you can do this." And Jesus perhaps felt that, and his response was to pray in this bewilderment. And then lastly, I was studying this in some detail this morning for my own personal study in Acts 9. And it just strikes me that when Saul is called by God, and when Jesus, you know, confronts him on the road to Damascus, and he says, "Who are you?" And Jesus says, "I am Jesus whom you are persecuting." What happens to Saul is he's blind for 3 days and nights. He doesn't eat or drink. He's led by the hand into Damascus. He has a meeting after 3 days and nights with Ananias, which he's told about. And in the meantime, during those 3 days and nights, when his whole world has been turned upside down, theologically, spiritually, his future, his career, his friendships, his relationships, his family, all of that has been, he might be the most bewildered person in the whole of the Bible ever, being confronted with Jesus is the Messiah, I thought I was supposed to kill his followers, but actually he's the Messiah. His instinct, again, what is it? Is it? It's to pray. He's praying even though he doesn't know the outcome. And so again, sometimes God does this to us, or allows it. He allows things that knock our faith sideways. I thought this, and now, that's the situation. We get surprised in our faith. And what do we do? Well, these are opportunities to pray. Getting bewildered as a Christian is normal for men and women of faith. We see it in the Old Testament. We see it in the New Testament. And it's important that we get this understanding that being bewildered is not a sign that you're unspiritual or that something is going wrong. When you can't see the path forward, when you can't understand what God is doing, that's actually just a sign to pray and find that space and time to be with God. God provides, as we see in these situations, in one way or another. So what does God give us in terms of resources? Well, first thing, we know the what's called the Lord's Prayer. So there it is on the screen, right? And this is not the only resource we have, but I want to make a point from this, that as we look at something like this, we need to ask ourselves why we've got it in the Bible. Why is it there? Why do we have these words given to us by Jesus? Not meant to be, I think, a rote prayer, although you can say it like that, but that, I don't think that's the reason it's been given, right? Mm-hmm. But we have this incredible resource because, at least part of the reason I think, is because sometimes we don't know what to pray. We just don't know. We don't know what to pray. We don't know what is going on. And so here we have the grace of Jesus. He's given us some ways to structure a prayer, to focus a prayer, to get us centered on something that's helpful whilst we pray through the bewilderment and get to a place of better spiritual health. So we've got this. I like what Tim Keller said about this in his book on prayer. The Lord's Prayer does not bind us to its particular form of words, but rather to its content and basic pattern. It is a summary of all other prayers, providing essential guidance on emphasis and topics, on purpose and even spirit. Therefore, in our prayers, the words may be utterly different, yet the sense ought not to vary. And so here we have you could call it a template, you could call it an inspiration, you see it in lots of different ways. But this is what helps us when we're confused. We get some guidance from Jesus as to how to help us to be thinking along the right lines as we pray. And I just want to encourage us not to neglect this. You know, perhaps you grew up using it in school or in churches or in your own life in a way that wasn't meaningful, just saying the words without it being meaningful. That doesn't mean it doesn't have meaning. Yes. And I would think it's one of those things as a Christian we might want to use more often in one way or another. So, to summarize some of these points, I believe that boredom in the Christian life, boredom in our quiet times is solved by life, by what happens to us if we're paying attention. Sometimes what happens is we're not paying attention to what's going on. We're bored or we're stuck, but God's doing stuff. We're just not noticing. And a large part of being spiritual is noticing what God is doing in our lives. And bewilderment in our lives is solved by praying prayers, perhaps like the Lord's Prayer, or praying through its themes and its ideas, allowing ourselves to submit ourselves to its discipline. And there's something about prayer that in our tradition of extemporary prayer, which we tend to have in our tradition, and that's fine, we tend to kick against the idea of disciplined prayer, of using form or using structures. And I think we're missing something there, because a lot of Judaism and a lot of the way that Jesus and the apostles grew up was using psalms and other prayers in what we would regard as probably quite a rigid way. It didn't seem to do them any harm. So we need to think about that balance of the extemporary, but perhaps also using structured prayers like this. So we've got some Bible stuff there. Now let's talk about how boredom and bewilderment make better quiet time some more, which is this. Let me ask you just for a personal bit of sharing, if you have something. I'd like to know, what helps you to be creative in your quiet time so it's you avoid getting bored? Anything, Alex?
No, I don't know whether it makes it more exciting, but Just like I've got like an hour commute total on the way into work, so just listening to books on Audible or listening to sermons means that over like a week I accumulate 5 extra hours of time with God, or over a month it's, you know,
right,
it's more than that. And so I can feel like that's one thing that I found really helpful, because then there's this kind of consistent, at least I'm getting this amount in, and kind of everything else is extra on top of that. So
right. So you've got that window and you're making the most of it. Thank you. Okay, great. Any other things that we've tried, that we've enjoyed, we found helpful, just a bit different?
I think going to different places to pray, varying where we go.
Okay, so not being in the same place all the time, different locations. Okay.
Well, just to follow up on what Chevy said, when I get the chance, I love to pray looking out to sea, because I don't know why, but I feel closer to God looking out to sea than anywhere else on earth. But what I was going to say was something that Caroline said to me donkeys years ago, which has been very helpful to me, and that is, when you pray, your mind is always filled with your current circumstances to start with, sort of thing. And so life gives us lots of challenges, so very often we want to pray about that. So and the idea is to think of stories, situations in the Bible where someone's faced a broadly analogous situation, and kind of maybe read through that, look at how they handled it. And also more generally, I think that sometimes, I don't know, if you want to go and pray, your mind's not about anyone else, but my mind's often in a totally wrong place. So maybe reading a chapter of the Bible or something, more than a few verses, it has to be like reading a whole story or a whole episode, and that kind of gets me a bit better into line.
Okay. Thank you, Tony. We're going to say
Once I did learn Hebrews 11 from beginning to end, literally, and I found that when you recite something, you actually start to see more.
You do.
In something than when you just read it. It was
yes.
The more I had to do it to learn it, the more I went over it, the more it went.
It not only sinks in, but you see different things.
Yeah.
It's true when you memorize a passage. It doesn't have to be a long one, even. No, a paragraph, perhaps. Super, yeah.
I sometimes take my songbook and read it, sing a few of the songs, lovely words that are so spiritual. It changes your heart completely, then you can feel that you're one with God.
Something about singing it that on your own that's a little bit different from singing it with everybody else. Both have value, but they're just different.
And just think of the words as you're singing.
Yeah. That way you can sing at your own speed, or you can stop or start again, can't you? Yeah. Excellent. Patricia.
To spin off on what Tony said, but I kind of, if I find something encouraging, whether it's something I'm specifically studying or whether it's something that comes up in a passage that I happen to be reading, if there's something like a promise of God or anything that really encourages me, I actually write it out, and I have my little notebook, and I'll write out the specific scripture. And I'll go first to look at it at different points of the day whenever I need encouragement. So I'm carrying it with me at work or wherever I'm going. So I find it helpful. If I'm looking, I'll just look at it.
So writing it down.
Yeah.
There's something about writing. You sort of absorb it more. Again, I think like memorizing is another thing. It helps you to dwell on God's word or God's promises in some way. One more, yeah?
Yeah, so I really, really love reading books. So what I do is in like a specific season time. So, for example, there was a time that I was studying on grace. So I was reading a book, also Grace is Greater, like beside it. So I feel like for me, you know, like it wasn't just reading the Bible, but actually reading the book as well, connected to what I'm working on. So I think that was a really good thing.
So connecting a book with a Bible topic and putting the two together, that can enrich the topic a lot, can't it? Well, a few thoughts about other resources. Books that somebody mentioned. So, books specifically on prayer, these are some of mine that I have, that I've read a couple of times, some of them. So books specifically on spiritual disciplines of one kind or another, whether it's prayer or some other topic, that can be very useful. Or books of prayers. So I quite like a lot of the Celtic Christianity type stuff. So an author called David Adam is one I really like, who was Vicar of Holy Island up in the northeast of England for many years. And there's some Celtic prayers, and I use some of those in my prayer time sometimes. So books of prayers can be useful, written by other people can be useful. Books on spiritual disciplines more broadly, or the nature of a relationship, a personal relationship with God, there's some that I have. Spiritual disciplines and books like that, books on Christian mindfulness and that kind of idea. Books are very helpful. You mentioned songs. This is my grandparents' hymn book, and I will generally sing one a week or something like that. I'll take it into the garden or into the greenhouse or something and sing one. And of course, most of them are songs I don't know. And I find that quite helpful because they are authors writing hymns and about God in a way that's different from my background and my tradition. And I find that quite useful. Sometimes I just read the words as poetry. Books are useful. Internet resources, as one example, a website I use from time to time called Christian Mindfulness. They have little YouTube clips of Christian meditation, some with songs and music, some with just a lot of quiet. If we had time, I'd play you one, but we don't. So, but I'll put this online. So that there's lots of internet resources. Podcasts, Renovare, an organization called Renovare, which is run by the son of Richard Foster, who wrote one of the classics on spiritual disciplines. Nathan Foster is his son. He records podcasts, mostly interviews with people about specific spiritual disciplines. Just finished a series on simplicity and starting one on simplicity. Just finished one on silence, I think it was. So I listened to one of those generally on a Saturday morning. And then I pray. That's one of the things I use. And there are apps, prayer list apps, lots of them. One I use where I have lists and pray for people. And it's nice when you click them when they're answered and you can go back and remind yourself of the answered prayers. Sometimes we forget about the answered prayers, midday prayers and evening prayers. And I often use the morning prayers. Not every day, but every now and again, there's some nice themes for prayer, some nice written prayers. There, so there's lots of different stuff like that. Personal creativity, some people like to write out their prayers. Maybe not every day, but you could write them out. Or using a thing called Lectio Divina, which is a technique of reading the Bible very slowly and meditating on it. So you read a small passage, maybe one verse, then you meditate on it, think about its meaning, in other words, quietly. Then you may pray about its themes, and then contemplate it, which is more about then what does it mean for my life? What's God saying to me through this? This is a good definition of the contemplation by a chap called Sean Lambert, who's a Baptist minister in Stanmore in North West London. Read a couple of his books. The best definition of contemplation I have found is that it is an intensification of a transforming awareness of divine presence. Now there is a phrase for you. How about that as a phrase? So this is kind of what we're doing when we're spending time with God, in our times of quiet with God. It's an intensification of a transforming awareness of divine presence. I mean, the divine presence is with us all the time, but it's that awareness and it's that understanding that it's a transformational presence, and because we're spending that focused time with God, it's an intensification of the transforming awareness of divine presence. I rather like that. Personal creativity, things like journaling. Did I bring it with me? I thought I did. Let me see. Yeah, okay, so I have a gratitude journal. I write something I'm grateful for each day in this. First thing in the morning, it's the first thing I do. And that always gives me something to pray about. At least one thing to thank God for. So I write in there each morning. There's loads of ways to be creative. Loads of ways to stave off boredom and to deal with bewilderment when it comes into our lives. And I do really believe this, that boredom and bewilderment make for better quiet times. Because if you're bored, you're not noticing what God is doing. And you need to step back and have a look. And if you're bewildered, then you know God's doing something, but you don't know what it is. But that should drive you to pray. And so boredom and bewilderment can be a catalyst for us to pray rather than a barrier. And I think that's a wonderful thing in our lives. So what kind of people will we be if we allow boredom and bewilderment to be a catalyst? We'll be people who are consistently drawn back to that heart of God in our times of quiet with Him. We'll be stimulated consistently. We'll have times of boredom, but they won't be long. We'll have times of bewilderment, but they won't last forever. They'll just drive us back to God, which would be a wonderful thing. And I think as we deal with that, we will ourselves be bewildering to the world around us, who will wonder what on earth it is that means that we can handle all of this stuff that happens in our lives, and that'll attract people to God. Well, I hope these thoughts are helpful. We'll have another class next week, and that'll wrap up the series. If you've got any questions about the stuff we've talked about in these classes, or things we haven't covered you'd like to see covered, then do let me know, and we'll wrap things up next Friday. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Mark.
Enjoy.